Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan. I'm joined here today by Tommy and Andrew. How are y'all doing today, guys?
Doing good, Logan. Thanks for having me.
I'm doing all right. Need to find me a new job.
Already?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you could always go into the Mad Max business, just start stealing gasoline. I think that would work out pretty well in this economy.
Yeah, you know, just hire an armed convoy to escort gas trucks around.
That's going to be a big deal. Well, you got to know your cars, obviously. But other than that, I think you would fit the role for sure. Anyway, Nigel's going to be joining us a little later. He's dealing with some technical difficulties right now. But for the moment, we're going to go ahead and kick it off with our recap of week three. So to start things off, we're going to talk about, I guess some would say, the biggest disappointment of the week. Although for a small town in Kentucky, I would say it was probably the most exciting game possibly of the year if you look forward. Louisville just crushed FSU. I'm going to be honest, I didn't really watch most of the game because I was watching Georgia Tech at the time, but it sure felt like FSU forgot to take the field. Tommy, was this just Lamar Jackson showing how dominant he was in every way? Did Louisville even need to have a team other than him?
Well, you know, his passing stats are pretty good. 13 of 20 for 216 yards with a TD and a pick and a QBR of 95.2. I wouldn't say that's necessarily like the world on fire spectacular, but the rushing stats paint a different picture where they had 314 yards on the ground and he had 17 carries for 146 yards and four touchdowns. So on the ground, he definitely lit everybody up. Definitely put on quite a show. I think at this point it's pretty much cemented that he has the September Heisman. We don't even need to play next week for it to count. Even though it's October 1st for most of the games, we'll still count it. He's definitely the best player in the country right now as far as what he's done on the field. For Florida State, I don't know exactly what happened. I was actually at the Georgia Tech game, so I didn't get to watch this one. All I know is that I looked up and saw it was 14-3 in the first quarter, and I was like, oh, that's weird. And then at halftime, all of a sudden, it was 35-10, and I was like, well, that escalated very quickly.
I think it escalated in exactly the right amount of time for Louisville. So, Andrew, we've been talking earlier in the season, FSU and Clemson, it looked like we could have potentially two teams coming out of the ACC that are playoff contenders. And now FSU has just kind of fallen off. Does Louisville play a tough enough schedule combined with the Clemson game to get both of those teams into the playoffs, both Clemson and Louisville?
I think it's possible. You know, the real question is going to be, how does the game in 2 weeks on the 1st of October go? The crossover opponents for Louisville are Duke and Virginia, so that's really not going to do them any favors. It'll be interesting to see who they end up playing from the Coastal in the ACC Championship game. What Louisville does have is they have a November 17th visit to Houston, which if Houston keeps up the way we expect them to keep up in the American, that's going to be another chance for Louisville to make a big statement against a highly ranked team. So, yeah, I do think that the ACC still has a chance to get two teams in the playoffs. I just think those two teams are Clemson and Louisville, not so much Clemson and Florida State.
Fair enough. All right, moving on to the next game. We've got Ole Miss at Alabama. Ole Miss gave Alabama quite a scare as I was sitting there watching with the rest of my family, who are all Alabama fans. We were quite concerned going into that matchup. Honestly, the Alabama defense didn't look up to snuff. I was a little – I feel like they were a little out of sorts there. And at the same time, you got to give a lot of that up to you got to give a lot of that up to Chad Kelly just being a very talented quarterback. Nigel, it seems like you're with us for the moment. Would you care to comment on the Alabama-Ole Miss game?
I mean, this is one game that I actually didn't catch for the weekend, but, you know, I kind of reviewed and kind of watched, you know, kind of the highlights and kind of the big strong points of the game. For me, I think Nick Saban summed it up pretty well. He said he's very exciting for the fans. Very rarely do we see a team going down from, you know, 21-plus to being up 21-plus. You know, Nick Saban did it with all three phases. I think that was the difference maker in the game. Special teams scored, you know, defense scored, and offense scored. Hurts did just enough. Didn't kill his team too much, and that ended up being the difference in the game. I think Chad Kelly had a pretty good game. He just had turnovers at the worst possible points in the game. That's the only difference maker because, I mean, they only lost by a score. So, you know, Ole Miss has lost to two very good teams to me, so I don't think they're exactly out of the mix. Obviously, they're not going to own the tiebreaker over Alabama, you know, coming out of the West, but I think that Ole Miss could still be in contention depending on how the rest of their schedule plays out.
Yeah, and Tom, you brought up Jalen Hurts. Tommy, I'd like to turn to you really quick because you're our stats guy. Jalen Hurts only had 158 yards passing, zero touchdowns and zero interceptions, and yet he still had a better QBR at 66 than Chad Kelly, who had a 53.3 QBR, probably because of the one turnover. That said, Chad Kelly also threw 421 yards through the air and three touchdowns. So we're kind of looking at a LSU situation here. Should Alabama consider switching out their quarterback, or do you think they're good where they are right now, Tommy?
No. One thing I would like to point about stats is that if you notice, if you go look at ESPN's website, Chad Kelly was 26 for 41 passing, but the entire team of Ole Miss was only 26 for 40. So somehow magically Chad Kelly threw one pass when he was not wearing an Ole Miss uniform during that game. How he did that is a miracle. If we ever figure it out, I'll double his QBR for the game. That being said, to answer your question, I think you definitely stick with Jalen Hurts. You know, he is one of those guys that has a lot of potential. You know, he's a true freshman, so he's not going to be perfect. You know, he's got 563 yards through three games and four touchdowns to one pick. So if he keeps on this pace, he'll be able to manage the game very well. You know, the other thing, though, is he had 18 rush attempts for 146 yards during that game. So what he did on the ground, much like Lamar Jackson, yeah, he didn't light it up throwing the ball, but his actual impact on the game was much greater than that. And that being said, with the defense Alabama has, he's in a fantastic situation to do even better with a defense that's going to be able to bail him out of rough situations as well as put him in good situations to just pad his stats.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, that's been the Alabama way of doing things, just have a quarterback who doesn't screw up enough. Moving on. So Ohio State crushes Oklahoma's last hopes and dreams of getting a playoff spot. I seriously doubt with two losses and with the remaining schedule that Oklahoma has to play that they've really got a shot at making it into the playoffs. But this brings up another big deal. I think we've kind of been downplaying Ohio State because everybody has been looking towards Michigan at the beginning of the season. There's been so much hype. Andrew, I know you were big on Ohio State coming into this year. Do you think after seeing how they performed against Oklahoma that they're the team that's going to come out of the Big Ten?
I think so. Like I said, they're the team that in my mind have answered their questions the best so far this season. You know, this Oklahoma game was really the first big game they had to play. They went on the road with a relatively young team and just dominated. You know, we saw what JT Barrett can be, and it seems like a lot of the tools around him have started to mature. You know, their next two games, home to Rutgers and Indiana, really aren't going to show us a lot. That game at Wisconsin is going to be a big one, and then they end the season with Nebraska at Michigan State and Michigan in three of the last four games. So they've definitely got a heavily in-loaded schedule. I think that's going to play to their advantage because it gives them some games to continue to grow and build as a young team. But, you know, I mean, they ran the ball for just under 300 yards, which is fantastic. And it's definitely something that Urban Meyer wants to do. They didn't throw a lot, but they threw efficiency, 14 of 20, but four touchdowns in that. You know, Noah Brown had a great game. And I think they easily, in my mind, become the team to beat in the Big Ten, because it's definitely not going to be a team out of the West. Even, you know, Nebraska, which to me has looked the best out of the West, still hasn't looked as good as Ohio State has.
I do find that it's a little surprising how high you are on Ohio State, considering you picked Oklahoma going into that game. So, fates change really quickly. Perspective changes very quickly. So, back to the Big 12. Nigel, I'm going to turn to you. Cal beat Texas, which was a bit of a surprise to me, because I have not thought highly of Cal all year. And yet here they come out of the gates and they actually beat a decently ranked team. I think Texas was probably overhyped. What was your stance? Was this just Cal coming out and surprising people, or do you think Texas was maybe ranked a little too highly considering their poor performance thus far?
I mean, Texas is, you know, really their ranking was based on beating Notre Dame at this point in the season. Really, we don't have enough of a sample size for any rankings. And, you know, it's been kind of repeated several times. I don't think rankings should come out till the first week in October, but that's never going to happen because people would have nothing to talk about for the 6 or 7 weeks leading up to the season. I think at this point, the Big 12 is not completely out of it. Texas, you know, obviously losing to Cal may hurt, but Oklahoma's not out of it in my mind. I think Oklahoma has two losses to two very quality teams. If they run the table in the Big 12, they have two losses. Obviously, they won't hop either of the teams that beat them, but I think, you know, they have two quality losses, as much as that adds up to, that won't hurt them too badly in terms of maybe a New Year's Six Bowl. Baylor's still undefeated because they play a pretty much the shittiest non-conference schedule outside of Washington this year. So I think Baylor could run the table and maybe be in the conversation. For me, Texas in general is just a young team. Defensively, they haven't really stopped anybody at the FBS level. You know, they allowed 47 points to Notre Dame and allowed 50 points to Cal. So, you know, at this point in the game, you know, this is Charlie Strong's, you know, his strong suit, no pun intended. And I think we'll be able to see some, you know, changes here, you know, defensively. We just know offensively they're going to be able to hang with everybody, and Cal is just too much offensively for them at this point in the year.
Wow. I mean, I'm just surprised. After losing Jared Goff, I didn't really expect him to have that kind of offensive output that you're pointing out. But, sometimes when you're – it's just the best team on that day, and that Cal definitely performed. Tommy, Nigel kind of touched on it, and I think this is something we're going to talk about a little bit later. But is there a team in the Big 12 that still has a chance of making the playoffs? He seemed high on Oklahoma despite their two losses. Is there enough strength left in their schedule to lift them to a playoff position?
I don't think so, simply for the fact that the odds in my mind of Houston and Ohio State not making the playoff is pretty slim to none. I think you'll see one of those two in there. Now, I could be completely wrong. Louisville could shame Houston, and Michigan could beat Ohio State and run the table in the Big Ten, and we see neither of them in there. But I think the odds are that one of those two will be in there. And I think the committee is going to look at the fact that they don't necessarily want a rematch game in the playoff. I think that's something that's going to start coming as TV ratings become more and more heavily favored. I think Texas still has a shot. I think a one loss to a Cal team definitely is something they can get over, especially considering that Texas still has Oklahoma State next week, Oklahoma the week after, Texas Tech, who's proven to be a pretty high scoring team, West Virginia and TCU, which are all reasonably quality games. And plus, not to mention their overtime win over Notre Dame. So I think Texas probably has the best shot right now, unless Oklahoma State somehow manages to run the table.
Fair enough. Yeah. So at least they, at least there are teams out there that have the opportunity. It's just kind of hard to say right now with what we're looking at. Maybe with the games that develop as they go further. One last game that I really want to talk about, because none of you were believers. Well, actually, I take that back. Nigel kind of believed. I think I swayed him a bit. So, North Dakota State upsetting Iowa. I don't know that I would call it an upset, considering North Dakota State hasn't lost a game in 3 years. But, hey, they proved once and for all, you know, you should not pay North Dakota State to come and beat you at your own home stadium. I don't know who I put this game on if I say it's – both teams came out and fought like hell. I think North Dakota State's running game was really what defined it. But at the end of the day, it was just a fun game to watch. Nigel, as the only other believer out there, do you think North Dakota State should be taken seriously? Should they maybe look at moving up to the FBS level?
It's forever that quandary of big fish, little pond versus a smaller fish in a big pond. I'm trying to see what conference they can maybe move into that would make sense for them. Maybe the Mountain West based on their location. I don't know. I mean, they're unanimous in the FCS poll this week. They're garnering votes in the AP poll this week. I mean, I think it's just fun. I think they're right where they need to be at. I don't think a move up will do them necessarily good, because they're not going to be able to compete. They're not going to be able to compete with the schools that they need to compete with, I think, to continue doing what they're doing. I think their alumni base, I think their coach, I think their kids like being the underdog whenever they go. And, you know, I think it's just something that you kind of cash in on every year. It's like, who's gonna play you, and who's gonna pay you to come, basically, you know, potentially lose their game. You know, Iowa was their first ranked opponent beaten out of the past 6 teams that they've beaten, and Iowa paid the most. Iowa ended up paying them $500,000 to come get their ass beat. So, you know,
well, I wouldn't.
It's interesting. I don't know. I mean, they may actually get into an Appalachian State situation where people don't want to pay them as much after this year, because they don't want to risk that upset.
And then somehow Miami will come to North Dakota State for some reason and then beat them soundly. Yeah, I could see that happening.
You know, Logan, I do want to say, you asked should they go up to D1 or up to the FBS, and you know, they only have 14,000 students, so it's a pretty small school, so I think they're perfect where they are. But one thing to note is that in wrestling, they are a member of the Big 12. So Big 12 looking to add somebody, maybe you should start looking to North Dakota State.
That is a random place to have in the Big 12 of all locations. I would have thought the Big 10. That's ridiculous.
By the way, the half a mil that I would pay them, that would represent a sizable chunk of their $22 million that they have for their entire athletic budget. Which would rank them 123rd out of FBS schools out of 231.
Damn. Nigel bringing the stats now. Andrew, I see the look on your face, but I'm going to let you talk about this a little later. I've got another section coming up. For now, let's go ahead and get to, were there any matchups that y'all caught this weekend that really caught your eye that you want to talk about real fast? And Andrew, I'll start with you.
The game that I really want to talk about, and it's really been like my pet thing this season, is Army West Point going to UTEP and beating the Miners 66-14 while running the ball for 426 yards. I am so excited to see the success that Jeff Monken has started to have at Army. I mean, the man's a great coach. He was great at Georgia Southern. He's been a great assistant with Paul Johnson at Hawaii and at Navy and at Georgia Tech. You know, and he goes into what's a really tough place to recruit and a tough place to win at Army, and has them 3-0, and honestly have looked better than Navy so far this year. Like, this might be the year that they break the, I believe, 14-game losing streak that Army has to Navy. And I think, you know, hot take, I think Army makes a bowl game this year. Ooh. I think all three academies make a bowl game this year, actually.
Big promises coming out of Andrew. All right, Nigel, do you have a good, you have a big game you want to talk about?
I do have a challenge for Andrew. Who was president the last time all service academies made a bowl game?
Nigel dropping the trivia bombs.
It was George W. Bush, because it was like 2006, I believe.
Okay. I like that knowledge on the fly.
Hey, I love the academies, man. I'm an option football guy.
Too bad you're fat, too fat and old to join. No, my game, I didn't get to talk about it earlier. I felt some type of way about Tommy, you know, talking about my boy Lamar Jackson. And I mean, I was thinking of it Saturday, and a couple of sportscasters actually said it. I mean, it felt like Michael Vick. Like, it was crazy how easy he makes it look. And the thing is, he's taller than Michael Vick, so, which helps him, you know, I think, you know, reading the defense a little bit better. And he can legitimately throw the ball. I mean, obviously he's going to still need more work. You're a little scared of him getting outside the pocket because he's not a big guy. But, you know, definitely the game that I took kind of the most joy in outside of Georgia, although they ended up winning. You know, we were all kind of hoping that would turn out a little bit different. But, no, those were the two games I definitely paid to this weekend.
All right, Tommy, you're last up.
Yeah, so as usual, I like to be annoying on this podcast and actually talk about two games. The first one I want to talk about, rowing the boat, Western Michigan beating Illinois to become the undisputed number one ranked team in the Big Ten. Western Michigan has wins over Illinois and Northwestern. No Big Ten team has played a conference game yet, so right now Western Michigan's 2-0 and everybody's just playing catch up. The other game I want to talk about was Pittsburgh, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State causing a stir once again after Central Michigan and the whole debacle with the last play of the game last week. They were actually tied in the fourth with 13 minutes in the fourth quarter and then went for a 2-hour lightning delay, during which time Pittsburgh was just huddled in the tiny visitor locker room while Oklahoma State had enough room inside their locker room to actually run full plays and throw 10 to 15 yard passes. After that, there was one touchdown scored by Oklahoma State after an 80-yard little screen pass that set them up for it to win by 7. But just a very interesting game. I think Oklahoma State right now is setting up to have one of the weirdest seasons ever.
You shitting me with that, like, the locker room thing? Like, are that the size of normal locker rooms?
I don't know. All I know is I was watching it, and they were interviewing the ball boys on both sides and talking about it, how Oklahoma State's quarterbacks were able to come out and be a lot more loose and a lot more comfortable because they were able to stay warm, to run passes and short little walkthrough plays in their locker room. So I don't know how big it is, but they were saying Pittsburgh basically had just enough room for everybody to sit in a chair, and that was it.
Wow. That's weird. College football programs have come far. All right. Well, that's
it. Advantage, baby.
True enough. That's what the Cubs got up at Wrigley Field right there. So we're going to move on. That's our brief recap for week 3. Now we're going to go on to Logan's lightning questions. Questions starts with a silent L, just so we keep with the alliteration here. So basically, this is a new segment for us. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have a question for each of our co-hosts here, and I'm going to go off one at a time, hit them all down the line until we run out of questions, and they're going to respond in two sentences, just their basic response. Andrew, I feel a little bad because I think you've already covered most of the topics I'm going to ask you, but I'll start off with a team that you've been watching intently from the very beginning of the season. So Army has started 3-0 this year. Time for overreactions. will Army both win the Commander-in-Chief's trophy and beat Navy this year?
Yes.
Nothing else to say. Okay, fair enough.
I believe Air Force has to travel to West Point this year, which is going to be a different game than if they were playing in Colorado Springs.
That would definitely be beneficial. But does an Army-Navy game always switch? It always switch places, or is it just played in?
It's played in neutral stadiums: Baltimore, Philadelphia. I believe the Meadowlands is hosted at once.
All right, fair enough. Nigel, you're next up. So I know you want to talk about Lamar Jackson. We're going to hold off on that for a second. Jacob Eason has had a QBR below 60 points in his last two games. Been a pretty poor performance out of him against lesser-ranked teams, I think most people would consider. Will Grayson Lambert replace Jacob Eason as a starter sometime this season?
Do I think he'll replace him in total, like in terms of starting, or do I think he'll replace him in key situations?
Either or, it's your...
Okay, and starting, I'm going to say yes, and in key situations, I'm going to say yes. I think, you know, we saw definitely in the very first game, when we're talking about this two-minute offense, when we're talking about running down the clock, I think Grayson Lambert just has those little nuances of the game, more locked down than Jason Eason. They are keeping that playbook super small for him. You can see it in the type of throws they have. You can see it in the quick and easy releases. I don't know how mobile.
Okay, fair enough. So Jacob Eason doesn't have enough experience yet. So that's they're going to turn to Lambert. All right. Tommy, you're up. So because of the lack of talent in the American Athletic Conference, Houston depends on the records of the teams they play. Now, obviously, they got Louisville down the line, but I'm going to ignore that game for a second. Would Oklahoma's loss to Ohio State typically have kept Houston from getting into a playoff spot?
No, it depends how Oklahoma does the rest of the season, but a loss to the number two team shouldn't really hurt a transitive property team that also beat the same team.
We've seen the transitive property work in mysterious ways before, but I will take your word for it. Houston's a pretty good team. All right, back to Andrew. We've asked everybody else their opinion on this so far, but you're up. Baylor is the highest ranked team in the Big 12 right now, with a game at home against Oklahoma State this week and road games against Texas and Oklahoma. Will they run the table and become a playoff team? Andrew.
I don't think they'll run the table, but I think at one loss, they would easily, in my mind, be at least in the conversation for the playoff. The questions about Baylor are obviously going to be about the off-the-field issues.
And they have plenty of them. I can't believe they still can't get over that. All right, Nigel, we're coming back to you. You could probably go all night on this subject, but we'll try and keep it short. Should Lamar Jackson be given the Heisman Trophy today?
No, it was too early. Too early. We had the same thing happen with Fournette last year. Let's see, at least by the beginning of November, kind of what happened. So, no, not yet.
Wow, it was awfully conservative of you. I figured him being your boy and all, you would be all about giving him the trophy.
I'm not that much of a homer.
Fair enough. All right, Tommy, we're going out to the West Coast for you. South Dakota State, what did I just say? No. San Diego State, my apologies, just won against NIU last week and Cal the week before. With the rest of their schedule being significantly weaker than those opponents, if San Diego State goes undefeated, will they finish the year ranked in the top 10? I'm not even going to argue about playoff, just in the top 10.
I'm going to go with yes. Just because right now San Diego State is undefeated, so if they run the table, they're undefeated, so they should be top 10, no question.
I mean, they are 22nd right now, so but the only other Boise is undefeated. Well, you can't guarantee that Boise's going to be undefeated down the line. We'll see how it plays out. Anyway, Andrew likes to get his likes to get his words in. We're going back to you, and that
There is a distinct possibility that you can have a Mountain West title game where an undefeated Boise State plays an undefeated San Diego State.
Okay, not your question, but okay. We get it. That doesn't affect their ranking, you realize. Okay, anyway. So going on. Back to that question that got you giving me that weird eye look earlier. So Iowa was ranked 13th last week, putting them in the 90th percentile of FBS teams, assuming that rank was accurate. Now that NDSU has beaten Iowa, would you agree that NDSU is better than 90% of FBS teams on any given Saturday?
No.
They're just not that talented?
I mean, it's a weird statistic. They're also, remember, they're operating with 65 scholarships.
That's fair, yeah. It works in different ways down there at the FCS level. All right. Nigel, this is a weird one, so bear with me because there's a lot of what-ifs tied to this question. So Deshaun Watson has struggled the past few games. However, against South Carolina State, he passed for 152 yards and only rushed twice, but for 8 yards. He seemed to be struggling with passing while scrambling in some of his earlier games, and also some teams have heightened up the run defense against him. Let's see. With that said, his QBR against Auburn was 53.8. His QBR against Troy was 36.5. His QBR against South Carolina State was 96.2. He rushed more than 10 times against Troy and Auburn, was held to 20 yards against Auburn, 50 yards against Troy rushing. South Carolina State, again, he only rushed twice. Part of that was because he wasn't out there for very long. Obviously, part of their system requires him to run the ball. But with the way the NFL is treating things nowadays, would he be better suited to trending towards being a pocket passer?
At this point in time, yeah. His height's definitely going to come into question. But I think right now, he definitely needs to continue to demonstrate that he is, you know, a pocket passer, more in the sense of like a Mariota. Right. You know, Brad Kai is going to have the advantage of the Mark Richt system, which is pure pro style. You know, everybody's always going to question people coming from a more spread offense, whether they're ready to just make that transition to the NFL. But I think he's pretty much proven that, you know, he's a pretty steady passer, you know, so I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue for him.
All right. Fair enough. Let's see. So, Tommy, Big Ten is currently has three teams in the top 10 of the rankings, all of which will play each other later in the year eventually. But right now, should we consider the Big Ten as having the most talented conference and the toughest to beat?
No, I think between the ACC, the SEC, and the Big Ten, you can have that discussion. But just like all conferences, the Big Ten has the bottom of the barrel, which is not very good. I mean, you look at how Northwestern's done. Penn State struggled a lot. I mean, Western Michigan has beaten two Big Ten teams this year. So I don't think they're the best outright, but I think you can have the conversation between ACC, SEC, and Big Ten.
Fair enough. All right. Back to Andrew. Cal upset Texas in a game not many people saw coming. I mean, honestly, even both of us were talking earlier in the year, we kind of gave Cal a lot of crap after losing Jared Goff. We didn't expect much out of them. Currently, they're 2-1 with a win over a ranked opponent and a loss to a ranked opponent in SDSU. Is Cal a better team than we're giving them credit for? And as a two-part portion of this question, will they be able to beat one of the following teams this year, Stanford, USC, and UCLA, who their coach is currently 0-5 against?
I think they can beat USC because I think USC is completely collapsing into a dumpster fire, and I was wrong about Clay Helton.
All right, pretty straightforward. I do like seeing them turn it around. It gives them a good shot against actually winning against a team in California, which even San Diego State did not provide for them. All right, Nigel, Christian McCaffrey got 238 total offensive yards and two touchdowns last week. Will he get more than 200 total offensive yards in all of his remaining games?
Could you repeat the name? Sorry, I didn't catch it.
Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. I think he still has some weaker opponents to go against, and they seem very, very motivated to get the ball in his hands. Obviously, he has a better backup this year than he probably had last year, but I think he can best that total in a game this season, definitely.
No, in like every game this season.
In every game this season?
Yeah.
Ooh. No.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Tommy, last question of the day. So, Florida, when compared to UGA and Tennessee, has not looked as bad in any of their wins so far, whereas comparatively Tennessee and UGA have struggled a lot against what some would call lower-tier talent. And yet, UF is still ranked the lowest out of all the teams in the SEC East that are ranked. Is UF being underrated, or do you think the other teams are being overrated?
Well, I think Tennessee is overrated right now. I think they're still riding their preseason rankings. But I think Florida's not underrated. They just haven't played anybody. UMass, Kentucky, North Texas. Whoop-de-doo. We'll see their rankings shoot up if they beat Tennessee this week and take care of business.
So, wait, the SEC actually has a team ranked accurately and not overhyped? That's mind-blowing.
Well, we don't know. They haven't played anybody.
All right, fair enough. And that's all my questions. I think that went pretty well. A little bit of fast. We'll kind of work on that in a little bit in the future, and I'll try and get some better questions for next week. Anyway, with that out of the way, Andrew, I'm going to turn it over for your fish report.
So, unfortunately for Mr. Fish Smithson, Kansas ran into the bus saw that was the Memphis Tigers, where they were utterly blown out. Sorry, Kansas.
Why do I feel like we're going to be saying that a lot for the rest of the year?
Probably. Fish did contribute 4 solo tackles in a losing effort, which for the season gives him 11 solo tackles, 2 assisted tackles, an interception, and 3 pass breakups.
Honestly, that's not bad.
His brother from another mother, Weston Steelhammer, was off this weekend due to Air Force not playing a game.
Oh.
The next 3 guys put up insane stat numbers, and my man KD Cannon at Baylor, 9 catches for 213 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, it's a pretty great name for a wide receiver, especially one who runs really, really fast.
I would kind of want a Cannon at quarterback more, but oh man, yeah.
Depending on how Kansas season continues to go, this might be renamed the Donnell Pumphrey report. The running back at San Diego State had his second consecutive 200-yard game with 23 carries for 220 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then a shout-out to Cliff Kingsbury Jr., Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech, who was 26 of 36, which is 72%, for 470 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Shit. Say his name again?
Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, God. How did I forget about him? He's putting up Lamar Jackson stats.
Because they're stuck way out in Lubbock, Texas, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's fair.
What Lamar Jackson does with his legs, Pat Mahomes does with his arm.
All right. And now Tommy has a gun again, sprung a surprise report on me. I'm not sure how I feel about this, but Tommy, I am going to carefully hand the mic over to you for Tommy's useless fact of the week that is no longer about Ohio.
Yeah, so most statistics in football are actually pretty useless by themselves, so I figured I'd talk about one and see how this segment goes. So this week I'm going to focus on one of the more overlooked parts of football, and that is field goals. So last year, if you actually look at it, the field goals, the two teams that made the most field goals last year were Clemson and Duke. Clemson was 28 of 33 on the season, and Duke was 26 of 30. So those are the – and Arizona State was also 26 of 34, but because they attempted more and a lower percentage, I'm looking at Duke. What's interesting about this is that Duke went 8-5 and Clemson went 14-1. If you want to talk about Arizona State, they went 7-6. So clearly field goals made and field goals attempted do not correlate to schedule. That being said, this year I was going to say that the current leader in field goal kicks is actually the Ohio Bobcats, who have made 13 of 14. But unfortunately, CFB stats forgot two teams that existed, one of which is the UNLV Rebels, which are perfect 15 of 15 on the year. Just to give you an idea, the second closest team at 100% of field goals is Auburn with 6 of 6. So right now, the best kicking team in the country is UNLV, 15 of 15. What that means for how their offense is or anything, we don't know. But your useless stat of the week, the team that has attempted the most field goals of any team is also the team that has made the most field goals of any team. Go figure.
And then, you know, UNLV is actually doing a lot with those field goals, aside from, you know, losing to Central Michigan.
Yeah, and, you know, being 1-2, so.
So, wait. You said they're 15 of 15?
15 of 15.
I'm trying to do the math here. Did they score any touchdowns in their last? No, they had to have scored at least one touchdown. Okay. I was like,
yeah, Johnny Stanton has thrown for 5 touchdowns already. Also 4 interceptions. So, yes.
Good stats.
They've scored some points.
I feel like... Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, I won't take it away from you. Fair enough. And that was Tommy's useless fact of the week. All right. Nigel, with that out of the way, we're going to push it up to your stock market calls. So coming off of a weird week for some of these teams, obviously Alabama's got a slight dip probably in their stocks after the Ole Miss game. Louisville just skyrocketed for anybody who bought low on them. Stanford's kind of staying in the same, but they look pretty much like the top team out there. Going into next week, big SEC heavy weekend, lots of conference games starting up. Who do you see stock markets rising and falling for? Or sorry, stock prices rising and falling for? Who should we buy into and who should we sell?
In the SEC, you should be selling Florida. Del Rio's out for at least the next 2-3 weeks. Florida's offense was humming, at least moderately, with him under center. I don't think they'll be able to kind of keep up with Tennessee, and I think Tennessee's going to knock them out of the rankings. In terms of rising, I'm actually going to go with Arkansas here. I think Arkansas has finally stumbled on a formula that works really well for them. They're going to be playing Texas A&M at A&M, but I think Arkansas will be able to shorten the game. And if they can minimize their mistakes, I think that they'll be on the rise.
Good stuff. All right. Personally, I think I'm going to buy a stock in Michigan State, because after that win against Notre Dame, and then they're going into Wisconsin against Wisconsin at home, I think they're going to see a jump in the rankings right now.
Also, add the Big Ten East. Even though Tommy was talking about, was it Western Michigan? Has beat 2 Big Ten teams. That was in the western part of the division. The East is actually 17-2 against non-conference opponents. I think right now they're the best division in football. So if you can buy stock in a division, I would definitely buy in the Big Ten East.
Now, Andrew, I know you've been high on Charlie Strong and you want to see him have a successful season and stay at Texas. Should we be selling his coaching chances now that he lost to Cal? Or is it still too early to say?
I think it's still a little too early. You know, Charlie's still dealing with the issues of, it's a very young team at Texas. You know, true freshmen, redshirt freshmen, true sophomores all over the field. You know, there's some good athleticism. I think the thing is if you fire him now, the guy that comes in is going to have a very stocked cupboard And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, he's the kind of guy that can win with someone else's recruits, which does happen a lot. But to jump back to Nigel, you seriously going to buy stock in Rutgers and Maryland? Come on, homie.
Because I'm just saying that because they're so top loaded. You have Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State. I mean, look at the West. Like, Iowa lost to North Dakota State, and they're the only reputable team on that side.
Nebraska!
That's true. I forgot about Nebraska. I'm sorry. Sorry, Nebraska.
Nebraska did.
Forget about the corn.
Some of that corn.
Yeah. I'm scared of the children of the corn, though. So
you and me both.
Right. I'm going to be kind of neutral on that.
So
I'm never setting foot in the states of Nebraska or Iowa.
So is Nebraska officially the corn's chosen people?
We don't know. They haven't played yet.
All right. Well, anyway, that's going to wrap it up for our recap of the week. Thank you, as always, to our listeners for tuning in. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot us an email at toemeatleather@gmail.com. And if you'd like to look at some of our extra posts, Tommy's really putting up a ton of them up there. Check us out at toemeatsleather.net. Until next week, have a good rest of your day. Bye.
Screw you.